In association with For Whom the Cowbell Tolls.com, Mississippi State's SB Nation site, this is For Whom the Podcast Tolls. And now, Daniel Black and Ethan Lee.
We are the champions, my friends. And we'll keep on fighting till the end. We are the champions. We are the champions. No time for losers, 'cause we are the champions of the SEC.
Nice transition there from, you know.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to another episode of From the Podcast Tolls here on May 24th, 2016. This is the official podcast of thecowbelltolls.com, Mississippi State's SB Nation site. Okay. I'm Daniel Black, writer for whom the Cowbell Tolls, and joining me is the manager of For Whom the Cowbell Tolls, Ethan Lee. Hello, Ethan.
How's it going?
Leaf blower. What were you about to tell me?
Oh, no, I was just complimenting you on the lyric change there that you did last second.
Yeah. Changing it from smooth. World to the SEC because we haven't won the world
yet.
But even if we do become national champions, we would just become national champions. There aren't any colleges in Division I baseball that are outside of the country.
I mean, so we'd be national champions. I mean, I think Jake Mangum is capable of like taking down third world countries and toppling nations. I don't see why we couldn't take down
not Cuba,
like the UN. We're going to take over the world.
Mississippi,
John Cohen,
so yeah.
John Cohen, dictator of the world.
The thing is, that could John Cohen could be a dictator.
Oh.
But yeah, Mississippi State won the Southeastern Conference Baseball regular season championship.
First time in 27 freaking long years.
Good math.
Yeah.
Ethan, we recorded this yesterday, and it was a horrible show for reasons that we are not going to discuss.
No, we're not going to relive that atrocity.
So we are re-recording, and we were looking through on the last show all of Mississippi State's SEC championships, and I commented to you that Mississippi State went 13-13 in 1987 but won the conference.
That's absurd.
I realized why from a Twitter thread.
Okay.
Back then, before 1988, they recognized SEC tournament champions also as SEC regular season champions.
So when I asked you if it was because winning...
See, you asked that, and then I denied it because Wikipedia said that we were the regular season champions, and I didn't have any other source but Wikipedia. So
I mean, that works out. Yeah?
Yeah. But yeah, the Bulldogs, for the first time since 1989, SEC regular season champions during a very hectic and crazy and wild weekend that did happen.
This weekend was just absurd top to bottom in such an exciting way. Such a fun way. Just across the entire conference, everything coming down, you know, it was a nail-biter pretty much at the end there. You know, pressure was put on Mississippi State at the end of the series, didn't fold under it, and just it was an enjoyable series, though it was very, very stressful.
Yes, we will get to that. In addition to our talking about Mississippi State's sweep of the Arkansas Razorbacks, we will talk about the upcoming SEC baseball tournament in good old Hoover. We will be the one seed playing on Wednesday. We will get to that, and we will preview it and stuff. And a good thing about our recording now instead of yesterday is that some awards were handed out. By some, I mean like a kajillion.
What?
We had a Ferris Award winner, an SEC Freshman of the Year Award winner, an SEC Coach of the Year Award winner, and five people on the all SEC teams, plural. So yeah.
Some of them overlapped teams.
Yeah. So we will get to that. But let's go ahead and start with the big one. Mississippi State sweeping the Arkansas Razorbacks. LSU taking 2 out of 3 against Florida, and Ole Miss taking 1 game against Texas A&M that led Mississippi State to the SEC title. But unlike what the Clarion Ledger thinks, it was because of Mississippi State's sweep of Arkansas, and that's what we're going to talk about.
Hey-o.
Yeah, hey, yeah, woo. Ethan, before we get into each game individually, do you have any final, just overall thoughts on the weekend itself?
It was fun.
Very descriptive.
I mean, yesterday I struggled to find words for this too. And I just can't, I'm still processing it all, to be completely honest. You know, it doesn't seem real necessarily to me just yet. And I'm still processing it, still enjoying the realization of, oh, we are SEC champions, and I'm a student while it happened. Because, you know, not many people can legitimately claim that. To be at the game where it happened, just so exciting.
So, yeah. Let's get into each game individually. Game 1, a 7-0 victory for Mississippi State. As normal, we talk about the pitching first, and that's pretty much all we need to talk about in this game. Dakota Hudson pitching his second consecutive complete game shutout of the season, and I mentioned this on the last recording, that after the Missouri game, sort of the beginning of this comeback that he's having, I asked, and it was a question that was on a lot of State fans' minds, do you think it was Dakota Hudson's performing well or performing well against very bad competition? And I think we know the answer by now.
Yeah. Matt Wyatt posted some stats from Dakota Hudson's last three starts. Missouri, who is not great hitting. Auburn, who is pretty great at hitting. And then Arkansas, who's somewhere in the middle. 26 and a third innings pitched. Of the 98 batters he faced, only gave up 18 hits, and has only surrendered 1 earned run while striking out 27.
It's not too shabby.
Only 3 walks and a .34 ERA. That's pretty impressive.
It's not bad. but in this game 1 against Arkansas, Dakota Hudson pitched 9 innings, giving up 5 hits, no runs, and striking out 10, and in the process earning his 100th strikeout of the season. He is the first Mississippi State pitcher to earn 100 strikeouts in a year since Jacob Lindgren, big chunk himself, in 2014.
His All-American year.
That's correct.
The one who did it before him was Chris Stratton. With 127, which I don't think that we'll see Hudson get that high, but no.
The world may never know. Tough day for our football pasta, Dominic Taccolini. People who listen to Thursday's show get that joke. Giving up 11 hits and 7 runs and 5 and a third, only striking out 3. And you already know this joke, Ethan, because I made it on the last one. It's not as funny this time to you because I've already made it.
No, it's still pretty funny.
But I mentioned on Thursday how maybe Taccolini has different pastas shaped like football players. So, you know, yeah. I mentioned on Thursday how if there's a defensive tackle, it can be Ryder Kamdichi, and it could just be, and it'll, for some reason, the box will just fly out the window. But also on the other side of the ball, there's offensive tackles. And maybe there's a Laramie Tunsil kind of pasta, so they're little gas masks, you know? Or maybe little wads of money. 305 of them.
Are you allowed to call this pasta underwhelming without being, you know, marauded on Twitter?
No, it's okay. The word underwhelming. Just it doesn't even have to be in any doesn't have to be in any context. Just tweet the word underwhelming, and you will get, as you said, marauded. Whatever that means. Okay, so yeah, a fantastic performance from Dakota Hudson, his second consecutive complete game shutout, and continuing on a roll for Dakota Hudson. But he's not butter. Okay. Hitting-wise, Mississippi State still putting across 12 hits, 7 runs, stranding 7. But we mentioned this on the last on our last recording.
The last show the la- that yeah. was sent into the sun.
That is no longer existing. it's been deleted from my computer. That, and we'll get to this in even more detail, because it's something that happened over the course of the entire weekend. But in this one game in particular, Mississippi State, 4 of our 7 runs were unearned thanks to 5 Arkansas errors.
How many did they have on the weekend?
I believe it was. Do you remember? I believe it was 12. Let's see, 5, 2, 7, 10. It's gonna be 10.
And 3, yeah.
Yeah, they had 10 errors on the weekend, and Mississippi State scored, let's see, 7, 12, 21 runs on the weekend, and 11 of them were unearned.
Thanks, Arkansas.
Yeah, but back to Thursday. Once again, we mentioned unearned runs, but Mississippi State got off to a quick start in this one. One run in the first, got off to an early 1-0 lead, and then it was by the time the third inning happened, you knew that, hey, this is going to be Mississippi State's day. 3 runs in the third inning. Gave State a 4-0 lead after a 2-run 6. That's pretty much when it was signed, sealed, delivered. I'm yours. 7-0 State win. And we got pretty much no help at all from the other schools as Texas A&M defeated Ole Miss on Thursday and Mother Nature won on Thursday with Florida and LSU as that game was postponed in the middle of the third inning with a 0-0 score. So their game one became their game two, and their game two became their game one.
I hate it when they do that. Just call it what it is and finish it when you should.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Mississippi State 7-0 win on game one. Game two, a 5-1 Bulldog victory. A bit slimmer.
Especially with Arkansas taking that early lead.
Mm-hmm. An early 1-0 lead in the second inning. But speaking of giving up runs early, Austin Sexton, that was horrible. Austin Sexton, although giving up that one run in the second inning, pretty much dealt all the way through. 7 innings, giving up 4 hits, 1 run, striking out 7, forcing 13 flyouts and groundouts combined. So,
you know, to Sexton's credit, that one run he gave up wasn't earned. So just for what it's worth, we had an error of our own, and that contributed to that run.
Mm-hmm.
So granted, you know, they got a run across on him, but it wasn't entirely his fault.
But Austin Sexton continuing his very solid year, improving his record to 7-2. Another good starting pitching performance for Mississippi State. And Reed Humphreys came in and sealed the deal. I'm starting to agree with you that he is sort of as close to a closer as we have.
I mean, we haven't had a true closer in quite a while.
Ever since Jonathan Holder.
I still don't think that Humphreys, you know, I can see your point, and I agree that he's not the pure definition of what a closer is, but we talked about why he was nominated as a finalist for the Ferris Trophy. His versatility really helps out this team, and in this case, he's, you know, a decent closing-ish pitcher.
Yeah, but he pitched 2 innings, gave up 1 hit, and struck out 3. So, 7th save of the year for Reed Humphreys, a very good pitching performance for Mississippi State. Hitting-wise, wasn't as great. We were still able to put across 8 hits. I love how it's 8 hits, and it's not considered a great hitting day.
I mean, we've talked about how this team is a hitting team.
Mm-hmm.
So...
But we talked about earned runs a lot, and we're going to keep talking about them, because only 2 of Mississippi State's 5 runs in this game were earned, primarily thanks to 2 Arkansas errors.
Thanks, Arkansas.
But we mentioned Arkansas getting off to an early 1-0 lead. We ended up scoring 3 runs in the third, and...
That's about that.
Yeah, we scored 2 more runs in the 8th, which pretty much... close the game out. So this game was, I'm sure it was a bit worrisome for some State fans, including myself, knowing that we couldn't really separate ourselves from the Hogs until the 8th inning, but still, we're able to get the win.
You know, the stress levels for this weekend kind of increased incrementally, like, through each game.
Uh-huh.
You know, just the closer we got to winning the SEC championship, the closer we got to the end of the weekend, the more, like, you know, stress levels started to peak higher and higher and higher. Yeah. Blood pressure started going up, and just across the board, you know, I found like 10 more gray hairs when looking in the mirror this morning.
Is that actually what happened?
No. No, but I'm just saying that, like, as the weekend progressed, just stress levels kept going up, and game two was stressful, but still nowhere near as stressful as game three, halfway through game three.
Uh-huh. But yeah, a 5-1 Mississippi State win, and no help from Ole Miss as Texas A&M defeated the Rebels. But
they freaking choked.
But LSU was able to take a game against Florida, which pretty much knocked Florida out of the race. Maybe not entirely.
Well, I mean, that loss didn't.
Yeah, but they were definitely affected by it, and it helped our chances very much. And going into Saturday, Mississippi State had a tie for the lead with Texas A&M ahead of Florida, so a half-game lead over Florida with Texas A&M for the SEC lead. We needed Texas A&M to lose. All we needed, Texas A&M to lose, and for us to take Game 3 against Arkansas. And we were SEC champions. And on that Saturday morning, I'm sure everyone were looking at weather radars in College Station more than they ever have before or ever will. As there was a bit of rain in College Station, and to quote Brandon Walker, they covered it up nicely. And if there's one thing that Ole Miss fans are good at, it's covering things up.
Oh, man.
Did you, Ethan, did you listen to the first 3 minutes of the Keep It 100 show?
I have not. Not yet.
I want you to do it once we end the show.
Yeah.
Like, legitimately. I may stay air for you to do it, so you can listen to it.
Okay.
But in the middle of all this, or actually before all this, Mississippi
State.
Kind of
while it was happening.
Yeah.
It overlapped a little bit.
Mississippi State was a baseball pun that I don't even really need. I'm not even meaning to be a baseball pun. Mississippi State was thrown a bit of a curveball.
Again.
By South Carolina as they swept Alabama. So all of a sudden, even if Mississippi. So let's say that A&M lost and Mississippi State lost, you'd say, hey, Mississippi State would be co-champions. False. We are currently a half game behind South Carolina all of a sudden. So we had to win regardless of what A&M did. So, game three. It was pressure packed.
Stressful from the get-go.
Yeah. As the game started, I believe Ole Miss may have already had a 1-0 lead on Texas A&M by the time Mississippi State's game started against Arkansas.
So.
Connor Pilkington started for Mississippi State, and he's had, before this, 3 consecutive really solid performances against Alabama, Missouri, and Auburn. This time around, he struggled mightily. Gave up 2 runs and 5 hits and 2 1/3, struck out 3, including those 2 runs coming from a 2-run home run in the first inning. And it looks like at this moment, we may have to go back to not entirely trusting Connor Pilkington.
Yeah, this is a case of where just being a freshman caught up with him. Giving up 5 hits and 2 1/3, not good at all. Not good for any team out there.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he's had some great performances as a freshman. I just want to emphasize he's a freshman. So I'm willing to excuse this, but it just really kind of hurt my feelings with how the game started with all of the stress going around.
Mm-hmm.
Connor Pilkington, if you're listening to the show, if you're one of our handful of listeners, you hurt my feelings, sir. You did.
You really think Connor Pilkington listens to
No.
Yeah, I mean,
and he didn't really hurt my feelings, just for what it's worth.
He made me petrified.
That's fair.
But yeah, Mississippi State down 2-0 early, but were able to cut back into the lead ever so slightly, 2-1, with one run in the first inning, an inning in which we sacrifice bunted Reed Humphreys, which made me want to shoot myself in the foot.
I mean, dumber things have happened.
Yeah, it's true.
We got a run out of it. Like, I mean, it wasn't...
But you don't think that Reed Humphreys couldn't have gotten it? But you don't think Reed Humphreys couldn't have gotten an RBI double that scored the man from second?
Yeah, I think he could have scored a run or two.
Yeah, exactly. But Mississippi State ended up tying the game in the third inning. So 2-2 is the score. About that time, Ryan Rigby comes in relief for Connor Pilkington, and probably at least arguably the best performance of his year. So far, 4 2/3, giving up 2 hits, no runs, and striking out 6, ultimately getting the win, improving his record to 5-1.
Definitely best performance, like, in the second half of the year, I would say. I would want to look at, like, his entire year to date, and we don't have time for that right now.
And we're not even prepared for it either.
No, I don't have his stats pulled up. I'm looking at the game stats. But just as a whole, with the pressure that was going around with the situation, you can definitely make the argument that, you know, this is the biggest performance of his career because he's only been at State for 1 year now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you could make that argument.
But yeah, well, Rigby was still in the game. Mississippi State's fifth inning. This is where Mississippi State started to separate itself from the pack. We talked about unearned runs, and Mississippi State scored 4 runs in this inning. 3 of them should not have happened at all. Absolutely should not have happened. We scored a run to get a 3-2 lead. Bases loaded with 2 outs. I believe who was it?
Their center fielder.
Reed Humphreys. Oh. Reed Humphreys was at bat. Bases loaded, 2 outs, Mississippi State up by a run, and he gets a deep fly ball to about right center field.
Carson Shaddy, if I remember.
Carson Shaddy. Yeah, it was just a regular routine fly ball that any outfielder in the world can catch, and the ball just bounced right behind him. You could tell he looked like, you know, he was backing up, and he looked like he may have had the ball in his sights, and the ball just plopped right behind him, and it was 2 outs, so the runners were going, so that scored 3 runs, all of which unearned, to give Mississippi State a 6-2 lead. And at about that time, Ole Miss had a 3-2 lead going into the ninth inning. So Mississippi State 6-2 lead, Ole Miss 3-2 lead going into the ninth inning. And then about in the middle of the sixth inning, once again, up 3-2, Ole Miss decides to load the bases full of Aggies with 1 out.
And the bottom of the ninth.
And the bottom of the ninth. And I'm thinking to myself, this is actually going to happen. Like, wow.
You're gonna blow it again.
Yeah, it's the most Mississippi State-esque thing ever, even though Mississippi State had no say in doing it. Like, why does this have to happen to us?
It's the most Egg Bowl thing ever, in my opinion.
What?
Just for Ole Miss, at the last second, to blow something like that.
Oh, well, yeah. Hashtag,
for Mississippi State.
Hashtag conspiracy.
Yeah.
But they weren't doing it on purpose. They actually wanted a win, since they went fly out ground out.
Mm-hmm.
And 8,500 people cheered for Ole Miss and Duty Noble for a good 2 minutes.
For the first time in history.
Probably.
Yeah.
So Mississippi State, all they had to do was close this game out, and they were SEC champions. And in the seventh inning, that's when Mississippi State started to they pretty much blew the game open. 3 runs in the seventh from a John Harland RBI single and a 2 RBI single by Jack Kruger, which gave Mississippi State a 9-2 lead heading into the eighth inning.
And of course, you know, we have to survive the eighth inning.
Yeah, Arkansas scored 2 runs. Could have been a lot worse. Had the bases loaded with two outs. I forgot to mention that Daniel Brown came in for Ryan Rigby, struggled mightily, which was awful to see, knowing that he's pitched quite well recently in two-thirds of an inning, giving up four hits, two runs, striking out one. But Blake Smith came in, walked the first guy on four pitches.
To load the bases.
Yeah, but luckily was able to force a fly out on the next guy. And then in the ninth inning, Arkansas was able to put two guys on base, but Blake Smith was able to strike three guys out, and Mississippi State won their 11th SEC title in school history.
Like, it, just reliving all of that, reading through the stats, reading the game recap, just still kind of surreal to me. I don't know if it is for anyone else, but just for me to process all of that still, it's still odd.
Yeah.
To hear those words, SEC championship, Mississippi State, in the same sentence, you know, that combination, not necessarily like that order, but just, it's still weird.
I mean, I told you that this is only the second SEC title in the Big Three sports regular season that State has won in my lifetime, and the first time I was four. So I'm just as prepared as this for this as you are. Yeah. That was Mississippi State's sweep of the Arkansas Razorbacks, and that gives, once again, State their first SEC title since 1989, and the one seed in Hoover, Alabama for the SEC tournament, an SEC tournament in which I will be, at which I will be.
Yeah.
And I will be broadcasting or trying to find a way to do this show from a hotel in Hoover on Wednesday night.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, I'll probably have to find, like, a conference room or something.
Cause you don't want to do it like our friend Justin Strong?
Yes, we discussed this, that Justin Strong did an episode of his show, The Bully Bark Line, in the middle of a hotel lobby.
And he broadcasted this on YouTube.
Yes, and in the background, there was the entrance, and like 15 different people were walking by at different times over the course of this hour-long show, including an elderly couple that sat down and listened to it, obviously not having any idea what's going on, and that's now Justin
Strong's...
staring
at the camera.
That's now Justin Strong's header photo.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll try to find something. But yeah, we are going to predict the SEC tournament. We attempted to do this last time, and it legitimately took about 20 minutes because we were confused on the format of the tournament, but we got it figured out now. We have the predictions written down, so this should take at least 10 minutes shorter.
Yeah.
But game one, session one, as they say, the 6-seed Vanderbilt Commodores versus the 11-seed Missouri Tigers. Once again, this is a single elimination format in the first round. Ethan, who do you have?
Who do I have? Oh, I don't have it pulled up. You have what
yeah,
I have.
Vanderbilt or Missouri, go.
Vanderbilt.
Yes, good job. I pick Vanderbilt as well. 7-seed Ole Miss versus 10-seed Georgia.
Ole Miss.
Yeah, we both picked Ole Miss there. 8-seed Kentucky versus 9-seed Alabama. We had differing picks.
You understand.
You had Kentucky, I had Alabama. 5-seed LSU versus 12-seed Tennessee. We both had the Toggles. Les Miles clapping. And then Texas A&M versus the winner of Game 1. So in our opinion, Texas A&M versus Vanderbilt. We both have Texas A&M winning that. Next up is South Carolina versus the winner of Game 2. So in our opinions, South Carolina versus Ole Miss. We both have South Carolina winning that. And then Mississippi State versus, in my opinion, Alabama, and in your opinion, Kentucky. We both have Mississippi State winning that. And then Florida versus LSU. I have LSU winning that. You have Florida winning that.
Correct.
So, yeah, that's that. And then on to the third day. It is the loser of Game 5 versus the loser of Game 6. And you obviously don't have Game 5 and Game 6 in your mind, so we're just going to read them off. That would be Vanderbilt versus Ole Miss. We both have Ole Miss packing it up after three games, with Vanderbilt winning that. Next up, in my opinion, it is Kentucky versus Florida, and in your opinion, Alabama versus LSU. So I have Florida winning, and you have LSU winning.
Correct.
Next up is the winners, back to the winners' side of the bracket, Texas A&M versus South Carolina. We both have Texas A&M winning that. And then back to the, and still on the winner's side of the bracket, in my opinion, it is Mississippi State versus LSU in our second game, which would be an absolute doozy. I have LSU winning that, and then you have once another big game here, in your opinion, Mississippi State versus Florida, and you have Mississippi State winning that.
Correct.
So if you have Mississippi State, you have Mississippi State having a bye on the fourth day and heading on to the semifinals automatically, so back to single elimination. So fourth day, we both have Vanderbilt versus South Carolina. We both have South Carolina winning that and Vanderbilt heading on home. In my opinion, this is all in the loser's bracket now. The winner of something versus the loser.
Winner versus the loser, yeah.
But technically, we're still in the loser's bracket because at this point, all of the teams have lost at least once. So, then the next game, in my opinion, it is Florida versus Mississippi State, and I have Florida winning that, eliminating State. And then, which would be the first time Mississippi State hasn't made it to the SEC tournament semifinal since, I believe, 2011. I don't know if we made it to the semifinal or not in 2014.
In a year that we've made it to the tournament.
Wait 1 second, Ethan.
Okay.
And then in your opinion, it is Florida versus LSU, and we would both have Florida winning in either of those scenarios. So that leads up to the semifinals, which is South Carolina versus Texas A&M, back to a single elimination format. We both have Texas A&M winning that, and then LSU versus Florida, in my opinion, and Mississippi State versus LSU, in your opinion, we both have LSU winning that. And then on to the championship. After all of that, we both have Texas A&M versus LSU, and we both have the LSU Tigers winning the SEC tournament.
Correct.
So, yeah, but Mississippi State will play the winner of Kentucky and Alabama on Wednesday in the second day of the SEC tournament. Obviously, we've already played Alabama, took 2 out of 3 there. Cough, cough, should have swept him, cough, cough. And we did not play Kentucky, but Kentucky is a team that has definitely been struggling as of late. Was ranked at one point in the year, about mid-season, and sort of tailed off towards the end of the season. And I haven't really been keeping up with what Alabama's been doing. I know they got swept by South Carolina in the final weekend, but that's just about it I know about them at this point.
Yeah.
But, Ethan, predicted starter for Mississippi State in that game.
I told you it'd be likely a trio of guys that are, you know, will likely start this game. You can pick from them. I'm not exactly sure who. I said it would be between Connor Pilkington, who is most likely the starter, Ryan Sear, or who was the last one that I had?
Ethan
James.
Yeah.
I could see any of that three starting, most likely going to be Connor Pilkington.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he has the most experience.
Yeah. I said Connor Pilkington as well, and obviously the thing that comes up with that is that, I mean, Pilkington pitched on Saturday, so in that case he would only have 3 days of rest. He only pitched 2 1/3 on Saturday, so really all we need from Connor Pilkington is maybe 3 or 4 innings, as long as he's pitching well and we're good, in my opinion,
yeah,
at least. So if Pilkington is the starter, we'll probably be seeing some bullpen action on Wednesday. How do you think, because we both have State winning on Wednesday, we're just going to assume that they do, unless they pull a 2004 basketball season, winning the SEC and then losing in the first round of the SEC tournament. But we don't think that'll happen. How do you think the pitching starter, how do you think the pitching rotation will go?
Oh, man. I obviously don't want to throw Hudson against Kentucky.
Well, I don't think that will happen. I think that would be quite stupid if that does happen.
So you're probably going to start Pilkington.
And so game two would be against either Florida or LSU.
You'd have to go with either
Hudson or Sexton.
Which I would go Sexton, personally.
Okay. I'd probably agree.
Yeah.
And
if we had you know, a legitimate game three starter, I would say throw, you know, with Pilkington being our midweek starter essentially. If we had a better starting pitcher set up, I'm not concerned about the SEC tournament at all.
I'll say this.
Yeah.
Do you think that John Cohen would, if we are having our minds set on an SEC tournament championship, because there could be the shot that, you know, we just maybe want to get a semifinal and then get out of there, just play well, win some games, and a national seed is locked up, but maybe get a higher national seed if possible.
I mean,
boost our RPI a little bit. Do you think that we would throw Pilkington? Do you think we would throw maybe someone on the bullpen or a possible midweek starter against either Kentucky or Alabama, but throw Pilkington in the game too? And the reason why I'm asking this is
because double elimination.
Well, yes.
Okay.
And also, particularly against Florida, Connor Pilkington had a terrific performance, not so much against LSU. Do you think if we were to throw a possible like midweek guy or just a bullpen guy on game one and then throw, do you think maybe if that's the case, would you think that we would just go ahead and lock up Pilkington for whoever we play on that game two, or maybe wait and see who our opponent is, because he did pitch quite well against Florida in the regular season, but struggled mightily against LSU?
You know, it wouldn't hurt Pilkington to have like another day of rest, regardless.
Uh-huh.
So I don't. You know, I think it's a toss up, because I said you could start any of those three guys. They're all about the same place, in my opinion. Just Pilkington has the most experience, especially in SEC play. So, you know, Kentucky and Alabama, more than likely you're going to get some decent hits. You know, specifically, Kentucky's not as great at pitching as Alabama is. But, you know, you're likely going to get some hits, likely going to get some runs. So it doesn't really matter who you start game one, in my opinion, as long as it's not Sexton or Hudson. If you're going to try, if you're trying to win it all like you're asking, then I think it's probably best to take that gamble and start, you know, a midweek guy.
So in my opinion, if we are playing for the championship, just have our minds and our eyes set right on the championship, this could be the rotation. Midweek guy, then Pilkington.
Yeah.
Sexton. So this is just saying, hey, we win game. This is saying we just go 4-0 on the, or 3-0 on the weekend heading into the championship.
Mm-hmm.
Midweek guy, Pilkington, Sexton, and then Hudson for the championship game.
I'm okay with that.
Now I'll say this: if we were to start Dakota Hudson on a possible game one in a regional, that would hurt him in terms of rest.
See, that's another case of where I would probably wait, you know, sit him a game.
Okay.
And I would throw Sexton in the normal Hudson slate.
Considering that, I'm starting to agree with you that we can't really guarantee who's going to... I'll still predict that Pilkington pitches game one,
everything is just so screwy.
Yeah. Tournaments mess with your mind.
But this is a case of where, you know, we have two phenomenal starting pitchers, and our starting pitching is talked about a lot because of that. Mm-hmm. But beyond them, it's kind of a mystery.
Yeah.
You know, like I was saying, if this was a case of where the bullpen was proven in deep like it was in 13, the tournament's not as much of a problem, because then you can play around some, you can throw some guys some days, and you can match up better against the entire SEC, in my opinion. But we don't have a dominant bullpen, and beyond just Hudson and Sexton, you don't really know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a case of where I wish we just had a proven game three starter at this point, more so than any other time this season.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know what you're going to get, just so you know what to expect.
Yeah.
So.
And awards.
Award season.
A lot of awards. First of all, we had three finalists for the CSpire. CSpire.
Oh, God.
Ferris Trophy, named after Boo Ferris. Red Sox Hall of Famer.
No, it's named after CSpire.
Oh, it's named after CSpire. Yes. the CSpire Trophy, presented by Boo Ferris. Went to Jake Mangum.
Yay!
Mangum PI, have you started writing a new piece?
I'm halfway through, like, drafting it.
Hurry up. It tonight. Good.
Hey, don't tell me how to live my life. I tell you how to live your life. I'm managing editor, manager, site dude.
Well, then, when do you want... Let's don't do it, then. Goodness, no, Mr. Bossy.
I'm bossy? You're bossy.
Oh, bleh.
Okay, so
getting
Mangum...
Getting into playground insults.
Mangum wins...
The Ferris Award.
Ferris Trophy.
And then about 30 minutes after that, he won SEC Freshman of the Year, the first SEC Freshman of the Year in Mississippi State history.
Which, you know... I see the point of, yeah, he's a freshman, but I think he could have won Player of the Year as well.
Yeah, but I think they'd probably prefer someone like Boomer White, who's an upperclassman,
whatever,
to win. You're just mad because he's from A&M.
Well, no, I'm also mad because Mangum didn't win, like, 17 awards when he should have.
Well, what other awards could he have won?
Player of the Year?
That's like, not, that doesn't equal 17.
All of the spots in the outfield for all three... Of, like, the freshman team, the first team, and second team?
Well, he can only go to one,
so that's like
first
10,
or second. He can only... 10, that's, like, five.
10 spots. 10 awards.
That's not... That's not possible. But, yeah, he won SEC Freshman of the Year as...
He's listed as a left-handed pitcher, too, on our roster.
Interesting.
So he's pitcher of the year as well in my book.
He hasn't thrown a pitch. Okay. So, also, John Cohen, his second SEC Coach of the Year award ever, the first Mississippi State SEC Coach of the Year since Ron Polk in 1989, and he is now the second coach in SEC history to win the SEC Coach of the Year award at two different spots, joining Ron Polk. Ron Polk. 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 Ron Polk. You're supposed to comment now. You're supposed to talk about how good Ron Polk is, because you didn't do it the last time.
He's very good. But I said he was good. I said he's the best in our history, and we have a pretty dang good history.
Once again, we've had six head coaches in the last 90 years. That's called consistency. You want to compare... I'm gonna give you a little comparison here.
Do you want to compare us to, like, football programs that are elite, too?
I'm not... Well, it's not elite. It's... Okay. But Ole Miss.
It's Joe Flacco?
No, oh. Ole Miss.
Oh.
So, ever since 1983, Ole Miss has had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 head coaches since 1983. Mississippi State baseball has had 6 head coaches since 1920.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, so Cohen, SEC Coach of the Year. In addition to that, all SEC teams were released. And I don't have all of the players pulled up, and there were a lot of them, so that's what I'm going to do right now. I'm going to get...
I have your article pulled up.
That's what I was doing.
Nathaniel Lowe, first team, first baseman.
All right.
Jake Mangum, first team, outfielder.
All right.
Jack Kruger, first team, designated hitter.
All right.
Dakota Hudson, first team, starting pitcher.
All right. And Brent Rooker, second team, designated hitter, and Jake Mangum, freshman team, outfielder.
I was going to get there.
You sounded like you were finishing.
I was pausing and saying, on the second team, we had Brent Rooker as the designated hitter. So that makes 2 designated hitters for this team to make it onto, you know,
that's
all
just
SEC
impressive.
Squads.
And 2 designated hitters.
And then Jake Mangum listed again as freshman team outfielder.
So yeah, Jake Mangum had 4 awards so far.
4-year awards.
Maybe he'll get some more awards.
Yeah.
Like National Freshman of the Year. Ethan, trivia question.
Trivia.
We have had a National Freshman of the Year before. Who was it, and in what year?
I can't think of it.
It's kind of obvious, actually.
I just
Rafael Palmeiro in 1983.
Huh.
If Jake Mangum does end up becoming National Freshman of the Year, he'd be in some pretty good company, in my opinion, at least.
I mean, as long as he's not on roids.
Palmeiro wasn't on roids.
At the time, correct. I was just joking.
Yeah, and anyways, it could legitimately be proven that he wasn't on roids during his MLB days, because his body type was not of the build that most steroid
users. Yeah, we're not getting into that debate.
Like Barry Bonds or Sammy Sosa.
It doesn't matter.
Barry Bonds was the freaking Hulk.
We're moving on.
Yeah. But those were SEC awards, which leads us into questions.
Questions.
First questions, and this is the beginning of a little war, a little feud that our listeners are have two of our listeners, Lewis and Mr. Vanderlip, trying to decide who's the best Mississippi M-State cast for whom the podcast holds fan out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Lewis has it in his bio, and Mr. Vanderlip think he's the best fan. So, little battle here, and this is the first inning, so ding ding! Questions from Lewis. He gets an automatic point because he got his first questions in first. Number one, was Brandon Walker...
Wait, there's no points in baseball. They're runs.
First run goes to Lewis because he got his questions in first. Number one, was Brandon Walker pretending to be an Ole Miss fan the greatest day in the history of Twitter? It was up there.
It's in the top 10.
Yeah. Number two, thoughts on the Clarion... He misspelled Ledger again.
Yeah.
Like Heath Ledger, like the Joker, he misspelled that again. Thoughts on the Clarion Ledger screwing up again?
Kind of come to be expected, but I'm not personally offended. I just, you know, think it's laughable, and I, you know, I don't take them too seriously when it comes to Mississippi State stuff. I go to other sources, like For Whom the Cowbell Tolls.
Plug. Because you're getting paid to...
Shut up. Just keep going.
Number three. I was so nervous watching both games yesterday that I constantly paced back and forth in my house like a psycho. Is this acceptable behavior? Yes, because I believe... I think a lot of people probably did it.
I mean, I do that for baseball. I do that for football. I do it for basketball. It's common for, you know, sports fans, especially, like, SEC sports fans.
I'm pretty sure I burned about 20 pounds... pacing back and forth during the 2014 LSU football game.
Understandable.
Yeah. This question. My kids were asleep when State got the final out. When the final out occurred, I screamed so loud it woke all three of them up, and my wife got onto me about it. I feel like in that circumstance I had a good reason to scream. Was my wife out of line for getting onto me? Number one.
Well, we can give dietary advice. We are dietitians.
Yeah, you need to go...
Not really. Like, there's an asterisk behind our titles there.
Hashtag very quality diet.
We can't give relationship advice.
Yeah, you need to go to a marriage counselor, because you've asked us marriage advice. I think this is probably the fourth time?
Fourth time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds the answer is marriage counseling.
The answer is we are not... qualified to answer this.
Yeah. Number five, in a fight to the death to be the number one fan, the number one of...
Am
I going to have to omit something because of grammatical errors?
The number one. You can be the number one, Lewis, but looks like Mr. Vanderlip might be the number one fan.
Should we... Do we need to take the...
No, no. Okay. Let's give him some slack here.
In a fight to the death to be the number one of For Whom the Podcast Tolls, who would win, me or Mr. Vanderlip? We can't answer that question. We're scoring it right now.
That's why y'all are deciding this.
Yeah, it's your fault if you lose. All right. Next questions.
Y'all get my questions? From Lewis at MSU.
Does that count as a sixth question? Yes, that counts as a sixth question.
Yes, we got your questions, Lewis.
All right, Bunt Murphy at JDug5513. How do you feel about the editor of the CL admitting that Ole Miss has restricted them?
I think he kind of unknowingly fell into your trap there, Mr. Bunt Murphy. I don't think he meant to admit that, but he did admit it, and that happened.
For those who don't know,
Egg Bowl Twitter,
the executive editor of the Clarion Ledger, was what?
Oh man!
What?
The fact that the executive editor of a newspaper, was confronting, like the biggest newspaper in Mississippi, was tweeting with J-Dog.
Was talking with State fans. And he ended up saying that they pretty much can't publish anything on the NCAA investigation because they don't have enough evidence.
And Ole Miss is withholding evidence and blah, 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 blah,
blah. I'm sure when that date will be coming up again. It's going to be coming up soon, late May, when they're supposed to release their allegations. It'll be another 30 days.
It'll be like another 8 years.
Yeah, it'll be... We'll be dead and in the ground. Bjork and Freeze, they're just gonna hold it so long that everyone will just forget it because it's been so long.
So, except Elite Dogs. They'll keep pounding on it.
Yeah, Elite Dogs will be like the only .com in the existing by the time the Ole Miss investigation finally ends. It'll be like 2142 and the internet will be obsolete except for Elite Dogs.
Oh, God. What a bleak look at the future.
Okay. We'll be dead, so hey. Mr. Vanderlip, the large dog trademark, at KT Vanderlip on Twitter. Automatic point for graphics.
Run.
Automatic run for graphics. 1-1 is the score. Yep. Questions. Number one, when did you honestly believe we would win the SEC title outright? When we got up 9-2 in the seventh inning.
Yeah, because at that point, A&M lost, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
And, you know, we had a comfortable lead. Still nervous about the eighth inning. I will never not be nervous about the eighth inning until, like, I'm dead. But...
R.I.P.
Thank you. Yeah, it was about the seventh, eighth inning-ish time frame.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Number two. Do we go to Hoover to win or just play well, stay healthy, and get home? I'd be fine with either.
See, my thing is, like I already told you, if you go so far, if you start competing and get, you know, 3 games in, you play to win at that point.
Well, if we get 3 games in, that means we'd be in the championship. Because we'd won 3 games.
Well, I meant, like, into the third game.
Oh, okay. Into the semifinals.
Yes. If you're in the semifinals, at that point, you play to win. Other than that, I'm fine either way. We won the SEC. We have a title to claim. But if you're going to make it that far, you have to keep going because nothing is guaranteed for any team after that in the postseason.
Yeah. Number three, what do you make of hashtag dog'em Twitter? I don't know what it is.
Someone explain it to me. I mean, I know football players started it. I know a lot of people started using it. Dak used it. I don't understand it at all.
Yeah, I don't know. Number four, what did you think of the Clarion Ledger hashtag this morning? Deserved or just shake my head funny? The latter.
See, I think it's both.
Mm-hmm.
They did it to themselves, and it's pretty funny.
Yeah, the only reason why, I mean, I'm not, like, mad at the Clarion Ledger or anything. I just decided to chime in and contribute because it's fun.
Because Twitter is a place for fun stuff.
Yeah, and I got a tweet. They got 55 likes and a Chad Bumpus retweet because of it. So
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, fun times. Number five, should I crush at MSU Lewis early or let him hang around a while? Fighting words.
You know, we haven't really decided if this is like a 7-inning game like with baseball or no, with like softball.
If it's tied after 7 innings, we're going to have to keep going.
Okay. What if it's tied after 9? Keep going?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, Ethan, do you have a...
Wait. There's another one.
I know, but not from Mr. V. I'm just getting a score update
here.
Oh,
okay.
1-1.
Technically, Lewis had more questions.
Yeah, so 2-1 Lewis is the score, because he had more questions.
But the graphic,
but
with
the
championship background.
But we already gave him the point, or run for that.
Okay, so we're this is incredibly arbitrary, because last time we recorded this, we gave Mr.
Score is 2-2.
Okay, there we go.
2-2 after one inning. What's the next question?
Oh
yeah, Jack Dragbean.
The Oompa Loompa avatar? I don't understand. I've never seen this guy before.
Yeah.
But thanks for listening.
Yeah, if you do. If your employee said sorry, but it wasn't my fault concerning their job responsibilities, would you fire them?
This is obviously referencing a certain newspaper.
Publication.
Yeah. I mean, if I were paying you and you were just like, Ethan, I hate what I'm doing and I'm not going to do it right, I'd be pretty tempted to fire you. But I don't know all of the intricacies of certain editors and their bosses and such, so I'm not going to say one way or the other. Because that's a situation that does not involve me. So I'm sticking my nose out of it.
All right. So that'll do it for this episode from the Bad Guys Season. Lead, any final thoughts?
I mean, it's great to see Stingray doing his rants again. His first baseball rant.
Yeah.
That was enjoyable. And as a whole, I'm ready to see what the SEC tournament holds, and I'm ready to see how far this team can go. Jake Mangum said in his post-game presser thing that Starkville deserves a national title, and I think we do, and I think everybody who bleeds maroon and white would agree with that sentiment. And I'm really interested in seeing where this team can go, just because it has that sort of special feel to it that baseball team, the baseball program hasn't had since, 3 years ago. And just, I want to see how this team can do against some of the best in the nation at a continued level throughout the postseason, not just through the regular season. We've seen how they, have taken down some of the best teams in the SEC, which, therefore are some of the best teams in the nation. They took 5 road series, went up, took, games from LSU, or took series from LSU, Florida, Vanderbilt, all impressive wins. They took 3 of 4 from Ole Miss. So it'll be interesting to see how they can do down the stretch. And that's what I'm wanting to watch at this point. And I think everybody's wanting to watch this team in postseason play.
All right. That's great.
And I have geese behind my house
right now. I hear that.
You can hear them?
I do.
They're pretty loud.
Everyone, shh. Shh. That's going to be the end of the show right there. The geese just signed us off. They said #VeryQuality.
That works.